Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
This hour is sponsored by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Affordable implants, life-changing smiles.
The views and opinions of Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, and Mark Grody should not be taken too seriously, especially when they give advice. Do not take Marshall's analogies literally, especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey. The sports thoughts of Rahimi, Harris, and Grody may change at any time. It's just sports.
Okay, thanks, bye.
The Rahimi and Harris Show with Mark Grody. 10 to 2 on 670 The...
We bring you the first meatball machine of the new Bears season.
Meatball machine.
The Bears are the ones who showed up to start the game, and then the real Bears showed up before the game ended. Another long season.
We're cursed. We're doomed. It's always ever going to be this way.
Hi, I'm just really frustrated with this Bears loss.
That was Donna at 3:30 in the morning, so...
Donna!
There is a virus in this organization somewhere. It's not fair to the wonderful fans in this city to consistently roll out this garbage.
Was that an XRT joke? He's like, there's some Foo Fighters for you. Fontaine's DC.
We gotta talk to you about another band later, right. Groats.
Oh yeah, oh we do.
More meatballs.
Tori Amos.
We're gonna have 4 wins this season, if that.
It fits in the tantrums. Here's Depeche Mode.
What part of a quarterback not being able to throw a football through a tire don't you folks understand? Answer that.
Here's Hosier.
Mark Grody,
I love when you say band names.
I always have wanted to say WXRT.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, with Mark Grody. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. The Score.
You outdid yourself, Robbie Triano. That was an excellent, excellent open.
The people outdid themselves.
They really did, the meatball machine.
It's alive and well.
And thanks to everybody who called yesterday as well. I'm sorry, our three-man weave is, we're new to the game on this in this way. This is the Rahimi and Harris Show with Mark Grody. Mark's over at Hallis Hall. We broadcast live from the Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Breaking news on the Score when we have it is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. You heard our producer Robbie Triano's open. Now I have Hozier stuck in my head. Or maybe it's Tori Amos. Bray Diaz is our producer as well. We also have Braden Fryer helping out. You can text us. As we mentioned, you can call us 312-644-6767. We are also on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. We are happy to be here on this Wednesday of the week. And also the day after, I think we all heard Marshall Ben Johnson say the right things when it came to what he took accountability for after the game in his post-game press conference yesterday. I still consider that a post-game. That was his media availability. It happened yesterday afternoon. Bears did release it on their YouTube channel if you want to check it out there. The most important takeaway from all of us that we thought was how he did talk about his quarterback, Caleb Williams, and what he wanted to improve on after this game won.
I promised you that after the 5-minute post-game press conference that happened Monday night, that he would watch the tape, get back in front of the media, and answer the questions that you wanted answered. And you know what? That man delivered in his first Monday morning quarterback on a Tuesday press conference. And he gave us specific answers about a quarterback that, I'm going to be honest, has me a little bit asking even more questions, but also with this sense that we may get more answers this weekend in Detroit.
Let's listen to what Ben Johnson had to say yesterday.
It seems as though with Caleb's off-target throws, they seem to come in spurts. Is that a question of getting him to settle down, or do you see something else?
Yeah, I'm still getting to know the player. I thought he started off really well early in that game. And then it certainly, as the game went, seemed to fizzle a little bit. And then towards the end, he came to life again. And so, you know, that's something that we'll have to work through. I'll see how I can help him through the play calls or what's being said on the sideline to just keep him in the best spot and help him out and support him the most. And we'll go from there.
When I hear that out of Ben Johnson, I hear somebody who didn't sound as confident as he did in his QB1 prior to Monday night.
Phil Thompson is all of us in asking that question because that was perhaps the biggest question that we wanted answered after Ben Johnson took his time, went through the tape, the all 22, and saw exactly what happened from every angle. Because when we watched the game, we saw some of the reactions to some of the decision-making on the field that made us question how much he was questioning Caleb Williams and his process on each individual passing play, whether he was scrambling or not. And now you get the sense that, oh, well, it seems like he's got some work to do to figure out what he needs to do to put his quarterback whether in a better position or just maybe even psychologically get him to the point where he's back to his 100% optimum confidence level.
Well, and yeah, Phil Thompson did do a great job. Phil is taking, he's got the new Bears beat now. Phil is moved from the Blackhawks over to the Chicago Tribune. And what I heard in that Ben Johnson comment wasn't just, I feel like mirroring all of us who watch the game, because that's how you describe it. Like if you were talking to your friend, oh, what'd you see in the Bears game? You'd be like, oh, really good first drive, but then, you know, not great in the middle, and then try to do his best, score a touchdown late. We would describe it the same way. So when I hear that out of head coach, that's not necessarily a good thing either, because I think it lets you understand that, you know, you can do what you can in OTAs and preseason, in having the time that you're allowed to have with your quarterback that's allowed to you by the league. The extra credit that I assume is done by the quarterback outside of those times. But then there's the, what happens once you're actually in a game? And how hard is it to reset the brain or reset the process, as you mentioned, and make progress, as you also mentioned, when it comes to what you're seeing during the game? And we all saw old habits slip in. I mean, for me, I'll raise my hand and say it's very hard to break old habits in anything you do, especially when you know that's what got you there. But I detected a coach that I feel like maybe thinks that he's got more work cut out for him than he might have thought prior to this first game.
I think you're spot on, because that's what I heard, is a guy who, okay, I've got this, I've got all the confidence in the world, I want to embarrass my opponents, we're not where we need to be, but I'm going to get us there. And then the game actually happens, and you're like, not only are we not where I thought maybe we were, but also some of the stuff I did think was going to be where I thought it was, that's not even where I had hoped it to be in game one. And it's going to be a time thing, right? It's going to take time. I think now he might be reevaluating how much time it's going to take to get Caleb Williams where he wants him to be.
And I want to ask you this question, and I'm not just asking you, I'm asking the listener, I'm asking Robbie and Ray, I'm asking myself. We all knew, and we all said it to each other, that we were going to have patience with this thing, this unlearning bad habits, this trying to have a better process, this strip it down to the studs concept. We knew the Bears record with Ben Johnson to start. We knew, or the Lions record with Ben Johnson to start. We saw how it ended with the best scoring offense in the NFL last year. But all of that said, what's the picture you have in your head of what you can take? Like, that's the hard part, is seeing what you can see on each drive, seeing where you can see the decision-making process play out real time. How many of those did you give yourself watching the game yesterday or 2 days ago? How many of those did you give yourself before you realized, say, this is more or less than what I had in mind, even for knowing those things?
Well, the first drive was more, right? Just based on what you had seen a year ago when they couldn't score on the first drive a touchdown. And so when they scored the touchdown the first drive, I was like, okay, this is kind of nice. This looks very functional, very efficient. very, even if there's a penalty involved, they're able to overcome. I can accept this. This is a very bright moment, but I want to see if it continues. And then you're worried about it continuing, and then it fails to continue. And then it's Clark Kent. And then, wait a minute, he's putting his cape on. Now he's Superman, but it's too late because guess what? The game's over.
Is it three drives where you're saying to yourself it's okay to be three and out because you didn't see it? Does it decrease to two drives after that? That's the problem. We don't necessarily know what the picture of progress or the picture of tolerance is for head coach to his quarterback, knowing what he knows his offense can do.
It's what it looks like, though. It's not even, so like, let's say it's a three and out, but it's a three and out where you complete a pass, the run doesn't go very well, and then you complete a pass, but it's just short of a six. That's a very different three and out than a three and out where all of a sudden it's third and eight or third and 12, and nothing makes sense on the third down play because it's not close to being completed for a first down.
Yeah, and what you don't want to see is the ball to nobody. Right, you don't want to see the thrown ball that goes into the vicinity of maybe a guy where you're even trying to figure out who the pass was intended for. We saw the defined thought process happen in that first drive with don't take a sack. Like when we can see the coaching points play out real time, when we can see what the thought process is real time, we know that there was progress made. And I think for detractors or anybody who would say, well, that first drive doesn't matter as much. Yes, it absolutely does. Because if you can't coach that, then I don't have faith in you anywhere. So that's where I hang my hat, is knowing at least there was a trust process and an execution process that married it that resulted in the ideal situation in the touchdown.
So because it was the ideal outcome, I think we're all maybe more attached to outcome first drive, game one of the Ben Johnson coaching era than we normally would be. But it makes sense. That's why you have to kind of talk yourself, not off the ledge, but just really put some nuance into what you're seeing in the moment and be like, all right, but I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to wait and see. And I would say this if they didn't score a touchdown on the first drive. But now, after the game is complete and we've got 2 days benefit of looking in the rearview mirror and hindsight is still 2020. Now it's like, okay, what are you going to do, Ben Johnson, to get to the next level? Because as we talked about yesterday, that jump from week one to week two, that's usually the biggest jump in any given NFL season.
So we're hoping for the jump from the Bears from week one to week two. This is Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody. Our segment is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Ben Johnson was also asked yesterday what he saw from Caleb Williams' week one start.
How did you assess Caleb as far as going through his progressions and then the actual throwing accuracy?
It was up and down. We had mixed results. There were some things that he did that were top notch, and I would put him up there with some of the best in the NFL. He had a couple throws with guys in his face that he delivered on target that were very tough. I thought he did a good job evading when he felt pressure. And yet there were still some that we would like to have back. There were probably three or four of them that we counted on tape that at a minimum that we would want back. And so, he was very, he came up today. We chatted for a while and he's very self-reflective on it and critical of himself. And so it's a starting point for us and we're looking to get better next week.
So that was Ben Johnson in yesterday's Bears availability. And again, asked by Jason Leisure what he saw. I do hear an echoing of the same somber tone that we heard in the day before. And I also think that that is a little bit concerning because he watched the tape yesterday before he spoke, I'm assuming.
I think it's appropriate. I think he's got the appropriate tone and level of concern that we all have. And that's my favorite thing about that answer, is that he validated what all of us saw. You know, we've dealt with coaches here, everywhere, where you're like, I think I know what I'm seeing, but I want to make sure that the coach is seeing what I'm seeing. If he's not, I want him to explain it to me in a way. Oh, no, no, no. He said, there's probably four throws that I can think of that he wants back. And you and I probably both, as you're listening, are like, yep, that throw, that throw, that throw, that throw. I know the four throws where it's a third down. DJ Moore, it's Cole Kmet.
Kmet over the middle, DJ Moore to the left side when he was reading the flat.
Probably Luther Burden the third, where he has no chance to do anything with the ball in his hands because of where he gets it. The Rome Odunze, where it's just over his outstretched hand.
Yeah, the Rome one. And what's funny is I think Troy Aikman identified those real time during the game, so it was a little bit easier for us to see. Aikman is seeing a vision of the all 22 because he's looking through a window. We're just seeing what ESPN is giving us at that time in the camera frame, which matters in these cases.
NFL Plus is a thing. I encourage anybody who wants to get football smarter to go ahead, make the subscription. It doesn't have to be an all season long thing, or excuse me, all year long thing, just a season long thing, and get a look at things. I've been really trying to take a better look at what things look like from a quarterback view so I can better understand the reads, the progressions, and what makes sense. Because I want to be able to have the conversation and know what I'm talking about in a better way. But again, when Ben Johnson says that about Caleb and what was good, because he highlighted the same stuff we saw, the amazing put your cape on, step into the phone booth, step out and make something happen plays. It's encouraging from that because we know he's capable of that.
Additionally, when he says phrases like Caleb is going to have to come to me, when Ben Johnson says that, how much are you going to do that realistically? Like we've said, well, if you know the guy's better on the run, then just have him roll out more if that's easier for him. I know you don't want to do that too often. I know that's probably not what you desire. And in week two, if that's really necessary, especially when you know that your expectations may not match, say, the Lions or the Vikings' expectations. But here's the other part of that, and I mentioned it yesterday with you and Mark Grody. We saw J.J. McCarthy out of shotgun yesterday quite a bit. Who on the Vikings is complaining about it after taking the win?
No one on the Commanders is complaining about Jaden Daniels doing what he did last year in simplified concepts in the dumbed down offense. Do what works. Now, I understand in the long term vision of Ben Johnson, he needs certain things. There's a reason why he had his offense at the heights that he had it at while he was in Detroit. And so, in theory, he needs Caleb Williams to be able to run some of that stuff because the predication of the passing game to the run game and vice versa is so codependent.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying don't mix in some of the rollout stuff that you're talking about and get Caleb on the move, but Caleb does need to have a fundamental understanding and no, that's not even the right word. A fundamental mastering of these concepts that make Ben Johnson look so smart as a play caller.
Yeah, and I think maybe we don't give Jared Goff enough credit for that. People talk about him almost like how the Vikings and Sam Darnold are discussed when it comes to the progress he made in Detroit. But again, he went to a Super Bowl with Sean McVay. You know, this guy had an incredible resume coming out of college. And at the time, his conference in the Pac-12 and Cal was a lot higher level competition than what it is relative now to like the SEC and Big Ten, for example. So Caleb Williams, USC, absolutely. You know, that's a quality conference that he was playing in at the time. But he didn't have the resume that Jared Goff had prior to him coming to Detroit. We forget just how well that trade worked out for everybody involved.
Patience and grace. How much are you willing to have for the Bears as a team, for Ben Johnson as a coach, and for Caleb Williams, most importantly, as a quarterback? Those are the questions we're trying to get answers to this season.
And then there's also the decision-making process, which unfortunately is something that we had to talk about yesterday. And it was also something that, as you know, we talked about all year. Ben Johnson did acknowledge that. I think some things might change based on what we heard, so we'll listen to that next. Football Talk here on The Score and Raheemi and Harris and Mark Grody is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $2.50 a month, which is pretty much what I'm paying for Wheat Thins out of the vending machine these days.
Wow.
And you know how I feel about those. That's how I feel about football. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. More from Ben Johnson and that game process next with Raheemi and Harrison Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris with Mark Grody. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
At the end of the game, after you guys scored a touchdown, what was the conversation about onside versus kicking off? And then were you hoping that kick was going to go out of the end zone?
The intent was for the ball to go out of the end zone.
Did you guys consider onside kick? I mean, how did that?
Yeah, it did. We felt like if we had kicked it out of the end zone and gotten the three and out that we got, we would get the ball back with around 56 seconds.
That's Ben Johnson. This is Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score. Mark's over at Hallis Hall. We're here with you, and we're talking about what we heard out of Ben Johnson's availability yesterday afternoon after he watched the tape, after about, you know, almost 24 hours after the game started on Monday night, just the day after stuff for him. What did he see? We saw a very somber Ben Johnson in the post game on Monday night. How did that translate to the evaluation that took place for Ben Johnson's first game as a head coach with the Bears? And unfortunately, there were a couple of things that were repeated, themes that we had to deal with last season that resulted in, well, a new head coach for game one.
Trauma, new management, same food. But is it? Maybe the food can get better after a few, you know, times through the kitchen.
Blind item, if I said the Bears had challenge and timeout issues and game decision issues, which year am I talking about?
I could just pick some years out of a hat if you would like.
Yeah, especially last season. And so to see that even come up the way it did this time around, I think gave everybody a little bit of pause. So our Mark Grody of With Mark Grody fame, as John Greenberg said the other day, which I thought was funny. Shout out to John Greenberg. Grody asked Ben Johnson, so what do you want to do differently?
Hi, Ben. You mentioned yesterday that you guys all share responsibility in the loss, including yourself. Is there anything specific that you could share with us that you would want back?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I just talked about the challenge. That's a big one right there, that timeout in the second half. Those things are very valuable, and having that at the end of the game would have been huge for us. I didn't think I called a particularly great game. I could have adjusted a little bit better to the lack of pressure that Flo was giving us. And so I can do a better job there. And then at the end of the game, felt like we could kick it out of the back. We weren't able to get that done. In hindsight, I should have kicked it out of bounds.
Okay, so I think that that's a pretty big list. And I think Brian Flores did toy with the Bears and decide, I got some additions to my defensive line here. I'm going to rush four down linemen and see how this goes. This is a pretty good test for it. So I feel like that was the case. And then as we saw in the second half, that was not the case. Started to be more blitzes, started to be more complex rush packages up front on the line. I wonder how he would have called it differently knowing that.
I think he got caught up in the moment. It's game number one as a head coach. And so much was going on around him, right? And I want to be the offensive play caller, but I have so many more duties as a head coach that this is not the preseason. This is real time, real results. Everything matters so much more than anything I've experienced. I said I thought he went through playing his starters in both the second and third preseason game, not just for them, but also to simulate for himself.
Right.
Especially when you're talking about a road game in Kansas City. Like the bar was not just high for his players, but it was as high as it's going to get for him as well, going up against Patrick Mahomes and company and their first team defense. So I think what happened here was it was the season opener, the home opener for the Bears, who was honored before the game.
The 85 team.
Like, stakes high. It's his first game as a head coach. I'm not saying steps were skipped. I'm saying mistakes were made, though. And he looked introspectively and in that rearview mirror And not only did he figure out what the mistakes were, in my opinion, based on what he said in that 12 minutes that he gave us, which is way more than 5 minutes because a lot of great questions were asked and answered in a competent way, but also the fact that he's willing to share with us and be transparent about, hey, if I could do this differently, I would. And this is what was going through my head at this time.
Well, and frankly, the answer about the timeout, you know, the 2 minute warning at the end of the game, where he said after the game, I thought that that ball was going to be booted into the end zone. And then you hear how he said it yesterday when he says we should have kicked it out of bounds. I think that's him understanding the limitations of his kicker.
Yeah,
or thusly also the limitations of his punter, still knowing that that might be the best option. The punter who was drafted in the fourth round, by the way.
Is that high for a punter?
Not his fault that he was drafted there. Just lets you know where the priority and allocation of resources are.
Are there other positions you would have rather taken with that pick in the fourth round?
I have a lot of questions about that draft class. That's why we're going to go over it with Anthony Heron later in the show, by the way. We have a robust list today of guests, in case you wanted to know.
Stacked.
I know, as I fiddle through my paperwork here. Big Ant is joining us at 12:25 for two segments, so you won't want to miss that. But that's a big part of it for me is again, how much work did you think you had to do before game one? How much work are you realizing and adjustments that you're realizing you're going to have to make now? Because that might be as good of an example as any, is understanding your limitations of your kicker and therein. That can swing a game for you.
Well, I think that's part of it, right? Is now he has to worry about all three phases of the game and not just the one phase. Look, he took Brian Flores behind a woodshed in each of their previous four meetings when he was the offensive coordinator for the Lions and Brian Flores was the defensive coordinator for the Vikings. He never got held under 30 points. But all of a sudden, instead of just concentrating on what adjustments you want to make with your offense, whether that's the plays you want to run, whether that's the personnel, whatever you want to say that he's been in charge of his entire life as an offensive coordinator, that now is still important, but you got to manage the actual game itself. And I just understand from the way he explained things on that Zoom call yesterday that he now has a way better understanding of what game day is really going to be like.
Funny you should bring that up, Mars Hall, because listen to how Ben Johnson talked about the challenge that was bad and the timeout.
On the challenge, on the Hockenson play, it looked like Noah Sewell dislodged the ball. What did you see on that to throw the flag?
Yeah, I thought I saw knees up, and so that's on me. I got to do a better job listening to the guys up top. You know, I get influenced a little bit for the first time with the people around me, and I got to stay true to the process.
Woo! That was telling right there, because we learned two things. We speculated yesterday, well, does that mean the process isn't working in terms of those guys are not seeing what we all saw on national television? Oh, no. He admits there, hey, that was on me because the guys were not telling me to challenge, but I decided to challenge because I thought I saw something maybe on the Jumbotron. What?
That was my concern last year with Matt Eberflus, because Dan Wiederer said, we know that the Bears have a coach specifically dedicated to that. And therefore, was he being ignored or was the advice bad? Because that's what you're trying to figure out. And I think there were definitely obvious times where he was being ignored. Like there was the play against the Texans that Eberflus challenged that was right in front of him that you could tell based on where we were watching the game through a TV that wasn't the case. But he's seeing it in person in front of himself. And I think it's very hard to say in those moments, I'm the head coach. I want to do this. I'm doing it now. It's my money and I want it now. So like that's essentially what happened there. And it sounds like that was the case with Ben Johnson, or at least what we're hearing is a head coach take responsibility for his team. Even if the advice wasn't correct, you're still taking responsibility. And I think there are coaches sometimes who would get made fun of for how many times they said that's on me. Like Gary Kubiak famously in Houston and in Denver, people would always joke, oh, because they knew the way he said it in the tone because he said it so often. He'd be like, it's on me. That's on me. But that's what you need here. Like if that is coming up often, it's because that guy knows it. That's part of what he did. I mentioned this with the interview with Lisa Salters during halftime on Monday Night Football when she asked Kevin O'Connell, how's the communication going with J.J. McCarthy? What do you think of his play? And he said, it's got to be better and I've got to be better. Did that in the game. Is that weakness?
No.
Absolutely not. You saw them win 27-24.
Clearly, they got on the same page by the fourth quarter because we all know what happened in the fourth quarter of that game. I'll say this. As far as Ben Johnson and replays go, I think he learned a very valuable lesson that will go a long way, which I've been trying to tell people forever and ever. It's just like I tell people, don't trust your opinion. Trust the facts as they lay. Don't trust your eyes. Trust the people who have access to actual video with different angles.
Well, and credit, not everybody has those coaches on those staffs is what I understand. So credit to the Bears for actually having that guy, if that is the one job. I never think you just have one job on a football team.
Right.
But if that is the main job, then do that job. You know, trust the guy whose job is that job.
So we talk about the main thing being the main thing as we talk about Ben Johnson and his day after press conference here on Raheemy and Harris with Mark Grody. And the main thing being the main thing for him for so long has been about offense and wow and dazzle and I'm going to run all over you and I'm going to do these deep passes after I've been running all over you.
Stumble bum.
Yeah, stumble bum it through. And notice, we didn't see any of those plays in this game that the Bears threw out there for their first game of the season. And I think that goes to show how not comfortable the situation was for a first-time head coach realizing all the other things that he's now responsible for. So when you say make the main thing or keep the main thing for him is being the CEO of a football game and making sure football operations run in a smooth, efficient, and most importantly, mistake-free way. Didn't happen in game one.
No, and I don't know why I'm not as offended by the false start penalties. I think it's
really?
Just because I actually know why now that okay. I said it out loud. I talked about thinking out loud. Like sometimes you just come to your conclusion during the show. I didn't necessarily mind it because they needed badly. They needed more pre-snap motion. Like as much as they needed air to breathe to have a functioning offense in the NFL, they needed more pre-snap motion. So you knew that was going to come with some issues. You knew that was going to come with some false starts, some procedure penalties that were not going to be correct because that's how it goes. I always say, like, if I'm not falling when I'm skiing, I'm not trying. Or if I'm not falling in yoga at least once, I'm not trying. I feel the same way when it comes to false starts. In this case, they needed to do those because that's how you know you're trying and you're learning a new process.
Also, it's game one, so mistakes, get them all out of the way now. Understand how low your baseline is and build up from that. What you can't have is repeated weeks of the same types of mistakes. But I do agree with you in that the motion pre-snap penalties, anything associated with that, I did expect a few of those. It wasn't like I was like, they're going to definitely play a clean game with all this extra stuff they have going on before the ball is snapped.
Like you think DJ Moore's not talented? He had false starts. Like, come on.
But
like,
I will say that second to last play was just it was just too epitomizing.
And that it goes back to how much are you going to be patient with? What is your level of accepted patience each week? Because you're going to have to figure that out for yourself in order to understand how you want to see this team make progress.
I give more grace to Ben Johnson than I do Caleb Williams, but that's probably because even though we haven't said it yet this season, I'll say it for the first time now. It's still COE, Caleb over everything, because if it doesn't work with Caleb Williams, you have a whole different problem than the one you thought you had coming into this season.
I think you did a good job of establishing that last year. I would like to bring that back as far as our checkpoints.
We can do that.
Yeah, I think that similar to the BBCI, the Ben Brown Confidence Index. Nice job yesterday.
Five-run lead will help, right?
I think you also need to bring back the COE. So that's just me. Speaking of the Cubs, we had a major acknowledgement of a career happen earlier today on Mully and Haw. And if you missed it, Anthony Rizzo announcing he will retire as a Cub. The Cubs are going to do something honoring him this Saturday. You have to act fast. So we will listen back to some of what Anthony Rizzo had to say and respect a career next on 670 The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
The Raheemi and Harris Show with Mark Grody, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time, and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series.
This one goes out to one of the greatest Cubs ever. Bring us a World Series championship. No better guy on the field, no better guy off the field. Anthony Rizzo and his family. If he is retiring, this one's going out. Let's hear Rizzo, Rizzo.
Man, that's how you do it. And yeah, I guess Chris Chelios did know a thing or two at the time, didn't he, when he broke that news to the crowd at Wrigley singing the seventh inning stretch. This is Raheemi and Harris with Mark Grody on 670. The Score. Mark's over at Hallis Hall. We'll hear from him at about 1:25. But there was a major announcement that happened today when it came to Anthony Rizzo. I think we all knew that at some point it was going to be time officially for him. We saw him appear on Apple TV Plus with Russ Dorsey this past season, but there was never an official retirement announcement until today. Retiring as a Cub, and here's the big part if you want to get your schedule ready. You got to act fast. He's going to be honored this Saturday at Wrigley Field. He'll also become an ambassador for the Cub organization, and of course, now he has officially, I guess, returned to the org and will be honored as such. Now, we know Anthony Rizzo played games as a Yankee, famously traded there in that sell-off in 2021, but not a bad way if you get to play for the Yankees and the Cubs. Anthony Rizzo wearing pinstripes, of course, we know him here best in the blue and the red.
Anthony Rizzo, honored Saturday. How much are those tickets about to go for as far as if you don't already have them, getting them on the secondhand market, he's going to throw out the first pitch. But what a career for Anthony Rizzo, not just from a Cubs-centric standpoint in that what he meant to this team, but just a baseball career in a vacuum, an 828 OPS over 14 years. That's good stuff right there. 303 Amen. Career home runs. That's great stuff right there. And a guy who, of course, was an all-star three times in a row and a gold glover four different times.
Also, of course, his work for cancer patients as well. He a cancer survivor himself. And really just what he meant to fans. It's hard to explain, I think, unless you were part of it, how Anthony Rizzo wasn't just the glue. He was the productive glue, as Pat Hughes, you heard there, mentioned, fan favorite, of course, but it's also because of how he produced. You know, Wrigley's not an easy place for lefty hitters to produce. He had 109 career homers at the ballpark and four straight seasons of at least 30 there. And they always seem to come at the best possible times, especially during that championship run. Here we were talking earlier, Marshall, about Ben Johnson's self-awareness. I remember when Anthony Rizzo returned to San Diego because he was part of that trade with the Padres. That's how he ended up with Chicago. And he said, I couldn't hit the broadside of a barn when I was playing for the Padres. Well, he obviously could once he was a Cub. And I just remember thinking, there's not a lot of guys who would be that casual about it. There's not a lot of people who would be that honest about it and talk to us the way he would talk to his friends.
The numbers back him up. He hit 141 as a Padre. And I think because of the success he had after he left San Diego, he can, of course, say what he said the way he said it. But I think the connection that this man had, and I think a lot of it is due to what he did outside the field of play with the fan base, I think that's what sticks out to me the most. I mean, outside of obviously the World Series win, that's like the big piece of this, right?
And he was considered a big piece of that. You know, he is a poster child for Theo Epstein's theory of change of scenery benefits athletes. You know, he of course with John Lester, that acquisition, and John Lackey, so huge for this team to become the juggernaut that it was in 2016. He was on earlier today with Mully and Haw and discussed his decision to make it actually official.
Why now, and what do you envision doing in your role as a team ambassador, Anthony?
You know, it's just coming towards the end of the year. You know, it was just had our baby, Anthony Jr., so been just engulfed in joy in that the last 3 months. And it's coming down to September. Talked to Mr. Ricketts and Crane, and the Cubs are rolling right now. The team's young, and, you know, they're scrapping right now. I wouldn't say they're rolling, but it's an exciting time, and, you know, to be part of the October run and just obviously playing there, I'm going to be a Cub forever. So the ambassador role is going to be amazing to do moving forward, and I'm excited for it.
And congratulations to Anthony on having his first baby, Anthony Jr.
They say that kids will change you. I don't know. I don't have kids, but my parents have told me how much I change them, and not just me, but obviously my siblings as well. But, like, your perspective changes, right? And if you're in the twilight of your Major League Baseball career, right, and you're looking at what can I do going forward, I'll be curious to see how much more broadcasting he does. You said he was on with Russell Dorsey, of course, on MLB Network. Maybe that's a path that he might want to go down a little further.
630, credit to you. This is Rahimi and Harris talking about Anthony Rizzo and his retirement. This is hilarious. This is a callback. Will Kevin, his wiener dog, be in attendance as well? Because there's a question, a couple times Bruce would ask Anthony Rizzo just how he was doing, you know, after he was with the Yankees or whatever. And he'd mention Kevin, his dog, but you don't necessarily know it's a dog because his name is Kevin.
Kevin, yeah, that's not the typical dog name, right?
That's a good callback out of you. That cracks me up. He also discussed what it meant to him specifically to retire as a Cub.
It means everything. And it really starts from when I first got there. The players there, Dempster taking me under his wing, Soriano, Castro, Reed Johnson, Jeff Baker, Kerry Wood. I can go on and on. And then getting to know Ernie Hanks, getting to know Billy Williams, seeing all the guys, the past Cubs that would come in, meant so much to me. And I said it all along, but winning the World Series was so much more than just those guys, those 25 guys on the field. It was so many guys who made that happen before us. And now to be able to come back and be one of the Cubs, I guess, greats, to be able to wear the jersey, Ryan Sandberg, who is such a legend in Chicago in his passing, to now, you know, hopefully create another legacy off the field in Chicago will be amazing.
I love the connection to that. Obviously, one of the greatest to ever put on the uniform, period. A guy who had his second season with the Cubs as their team ambassador, to be connected to that and Ryan Sandberg and his legacy in his mind, you lose one, and now you get Anthony Rizzo to have that role going forward. And I have to imagine he'll be a Cubs Hall of Famer as well.
I assume that as well. You know, we just had that over the weekend, and that was a really fun moment. I think each and every day over the weekend, I was at the game on Friday, and every time they showed Sammy Sosa on the video board, everybody screamed. And he deserves that. And absolutely so does Anthony Rizzo, that's for sure. And Kevin Rizzo.
And Anthony Jr.
Yeah, so shout out to the Rizzo family, including Kevin and now Anthony Jr. Congratulations. We have more coming up, of course, on this very busy Wednesday here on 670 The Score. NFL news aplenty, so who better to talk about it with than the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, is next on Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.